When I think about the life of Avram Avinu, the first word that comes to my mind is paradoxical. That there are so many elements of his life which are paradoxical. I'm not going to go into all of them now. He's a person who opens up his tents for everybody, but his own family, like his own father, he leaves and then he has to leave. Lot, they separate and Yishmael he has to kick out. Which, again, just appreciate the irony. The guy's taking everyone else in, but his own kid he has to get rid of. He's a man full of chesed, but he's asked to kill his own kid. And I can go on and on and on. There's full of paradox in Avram's life. On the other hand, when you look at Yaakov's life, I think that the best word to use is complicated. You know, if he had a Facebook status, Yaakov, he would say complicated. Everything seems to be complicated with Yaakov. And I think when we go really want to understand, if you go back to the most basic point, who is he? He's an Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. The way that I would translate that is he's a simple person who sits in the tents. Now, that's who he is. When I say that's who he is, that's who he is in terms of his essence. But life is funny and life is complicated and he becomes something else and he's forced to be somebody else. And also, if we'll be honest, the worst thing that ever happened to him, which may also be the best, but it's certainly the worst thing that ever happened to him, is that he took the brachot. Because he took the brachot, basically his life was ruined. When I say his life was ruined, what I mean is he can no longer be an Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. It ruined him being who he is. Now again, you can tell me, just like Avram, who's an Ish Chesed, needs to somehow metamorphosize and become a man who can also obey Midat HaDin. So maybe Yaakov is somebody who's an Ish Tam who needs to also go through some type of a metamorphosis and become someone else or something else. I'm willing to accept that, but again, I'm just going to use that word complicated because for Yaakov, things become complicated. He just wants to get married. I mean, how complicated is this to get married? Right? Even you did it, right? It's not such a difficult thing. And then next thing you know, instead of this wife, he ends up with that wife, and then he ends up with four wives. And it's just like, you have to wonder sometimes, or like, I guess if you have to talk with him, a cup of coffee with Yaakov, and say, so Yaakov, what happened? And I think he'd be just looking and saying, I don't know. I have no idea how I got here. And again, I'm going to use that same word. With Yaakov, things seem to be complicated. Now, one thing which I think is very interesting is in the beginning of last week's parasha, Yaakov leaves, right? Yaakov leaves his parents' home. And why does he leave? So he's actually on a dual mission. His mother told him to leave because his brother wants to kill him. His father told him to leave because he needs to go find a wife. So, ironically, here is like the one thing that Yaakov ever did, maybe I'm overstating it, but here's the one thing that he ever did that both parents asked him to do, and therefore conveniently he can now listen to both of his parents. Because beforehand, his mother put him in an impossible situation by saying, go and fool your father. So therefore, it's at odds. Either you satisfy one or you satisfy the other. You can't satisfy both. But now we have them both telling him to do the same thing, and they both literally say to go to Laban's house, although for different reasons. Rivka, to save your life, and Yitzhak, in order to find a bride. So now, years have gone by, and Yaakov is coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and on his way back, we just have to ask, so whose mission did he complete? And I think the answer is that he's completed the mission that his father sent him on. He got married, and as we've mentioned, he got married again and again and again. And he had kids and more and more and more. So Yaakov certainly accomplished what Yitzhak had told him to. And therefore, as far as the Yitzhak instruction, it's time to come back. And by the way, it could have been time to come back even before this. But what we wonder is in terms of the Rivka instruction. And yes, Rivka speaks the same way that her brother would seem to speak. You know, why don't you go, what does she call it, Yamim Achadim? Go for a little while. Remember when Lavan also says you work another week? Is it a week or 7 years? So we know in this family you really can't try. Yeah, old chamesh dakot. This is where it comes from. An asher tashuv chamat achicha, till your brother calms down. So I guess that's really the big question: has Esav calmed down or not? And we don't necessarily know. When we start the parsha, well, another person who doesn't know is Yaakov. V'yishlach Yaakov melachim lefanav el Esav achiv arta Seir sedei Edom. Now, first of all, that's fascinating. That he is, in fact, where? He's in Seir. He's in Stay Edom. He's not in Eretz Canaan. So that itself would seem to indicate Esav's fidelity to his father, because his father said Eretz Yisrael is going to Yaakov. And Esav seems to have accepted that. And he seems to have picked up, and later on there's a pasuk which will say clearly what the relationship to those, what between those two psukim is certainly a question, but Esav is not in Eretz Canaan right now. Why he's not there, as I said, you can look in the various mefarshim. They question whether it's a permanent or whether it's a temporary move on Esav's part. But Yaakov sends messages there. So I'm going to say the first inkling that we have as far as Esav's state of mind is actually one that we can be cautiously optimistic by virtue of the fact that Esav may have accepted, but the question is what he accepts. Did he accept the bracha that Yaakov got that was coming to Yaakov? That he accepts. But does he accept the bracha that Yaakov stole from Esav? That's the question. And that gets resolved, I think, real quickly when Yaakov sends malachim. And notice the word malachim over here. He sends, I don't know what to call it. Is it malachim? Is it angel? I mean, right before this, the pasuk before this, two pasukim before this says, V'Yaakov alach l'darkov yifgabo malchei Elohim. And he meets angels of God. Malchei Elohim. I think that means angels. V'yom Yaakov kasher ra'a machanei Elohim zeh, v'yikor shem makom ahu machanayim. And then v'yishlach Yaakov melachim. So I would have said, I guess like Rashi, malachim mamash. I would have said, yeah, these are real angels. Yaakov sees angels. So he commands them, go to Esav, give him a message, Kol tamrila duni leisav, komar avdecha Yaakov, im lavangarti, v'ichar ad atav, v'yili shor v'chamor tzon v'eviv v'shivcha. Now that's something we have to question, the wisdom of mentioning this. Because when he says that I've collected all these things, shor and chamor and tzon and eviv and shivcha, he seems to be mentioning to Esav, oh yeah, by the way, remember all those things that were coming to you? All the bounty that you were supposed to be getting? Well, it's sort of, you know, the bracha that I got has come to fruition. And I just, as I said, I question the wisdom of this. Not that I want to question Yaakov, but v'eshlecha lagid l'aduni l'mtzochein b'necha. But it's interesting, he calls him Aduni. He says, ko amar avdecha Yaakov. Part of the bracha was subservience, that your brother will be subservient to you. So Yaakov seems to be saying, I'm still subservient to you, even though he's admitting that he's made a lot of money since taking the bracha. So there is again conflicting information right there. V'yashuvu malachim, and the malachim come back, El Yaakov Leim were saying, Banu el achicha el Esav, v'gam holech l'kratcha v'arbam od yishimo. We went to him, and he's on his way back, and guess what? He has 400 men with him. And at that point, we now know that we no longer need to guess. Because you don't bring an entourage of 400 people. This is not the band. Right? This is not like Love and said, oh, had I only known that you were going, I would have, you know, brought the band out. This is not the band. Esav is not saying, oh, I'm bringing out the whole full symphony here to welcome you back. That's not what it is. When he says that Esav is bringing people with him, soldiers with him, Yaakov is scared. V'yiro Yaakov ma'od v'yetzir lo, and Yaakov goes into strategic mode. V'yichatz et ha'am asher ito, he divides the people with him. V'etatzon v'etakavar g'minlum l'shnei machalot, all the things that he owns and all the things dear to him, he divides into two different camps. And he says clearly that Esav comes to one, attacked one camp, then the other one may get away. He attacks one, then the other one may get away. So, as I said, Yaakov is clearly in survival mode. Strategic thinking, and he's scared that there's a war, and he's scared that he's going to be killed, and he's probably scared of a couple of other things, which I'll try to articulate in a second. What's Esav going to do? Which means, and what we really need to do to understand this whole parsha, is you need to get in touch with your inner Esav. And then we seem to look at Esav as being somewhat of a wild person, somebody who's a hunter, and somebody who's a killer, and somebody who thinks he was wronged. And by the way, he's thinking he's wrong. There's pretty strong evidence for that. He was wronged. Something was taken from him. And if I were Esav, then I would want to take it back. Which means, you may remember that when Esav says, I'm going to kill him, he says that as soon as our father is dead, I'm going to kill him. So if Esav is really a man of his word, then perhaps, we have reason to believe that Yaakov himself will be safe. On the other hand, sometimes when you wait 20 years for revenge, It could be that Esav sort of forgot that, and who said that Esav is still respecting his father, and who knows any of this is the case. So therefore, as a minimum, what we should expect from Esav is that he'll take all the possessions. Why take the possessions? Of course, they're his. What will he do to the women? He'll take them because they're his. As a minimum, again, Esav, we would expecting him to be raping and pillaging and taking everything. And by the way, he may choose, because he respects his father, not to kill Yaakov, but leave him there by himself after he killed all of his children, after he raped and took away his women, and after he took away all of his possessions. But because he respects his father, to leave him there. And I'm saying that very seriously. If you get in touch with your, you know, inner Esav and the rage that Esav seems to feel, and the fact that he's bringing 400 men with him. So this is what we would expect. And if things go right. And if things go wrong, then he kills Yaakov also. Which then leads us to a larger issue, which Yaakov seems to bring up. But God, you promised I'll be okay. By the way, did God promise that all of his possessions will be okay? Did God promise that his wife will be okay? His wives would be okay? Did he promise that his kids will be okay? Or promise that he'll be okay? So you can now tell me, but being okay means all those other things, and I would say, oh, shekeno shelo. This is, right, you're talking about either yes or no, and you're talking about a God who also promised that to Avram that you're going to have kids, and then said, go and kill him. So, you know, you want to call God on it? So call God on it. But I'm saying, things are not simple. Things are, shall we say it again now? Things are complicated. So when he divides the camp, I think that Yaakov now has actually an incredible question to ask himself. And again, what are the exact divisions of these two camps is not all that clear. Now, later on when they line up in front of Esav, we see how they line up. But right now, in terms of the exact division of camps, it's not necessarily clear. So which camp should Yaakov join? Camp A or Camp B? Should we assume that one is a Rachel camp and one is a Leah camp? So then maybe we would be thinking he should more be with the Rachel camp, because that's the woman he loves. But I'm still saying is that, how do you make these decisions? How in the world do you make this decision? So which camp I'm going to go in? And what's the answer that we actually find in the Chumash? It's actually a very interesting answer, that Yaakov doesn't end up with either camp. And maybe the difficulty in making that decision, but we find Yaakov all by himself. We find him isolated from everyone else. And I want to read the verse. Ve'yakom b'laylehu, Lamed bet kaf bet. Yaakov gets up at night. Ve'yikachat shnei nashav v'shnei shifkotav v'et achad asar yiladav v'yavod ma'avar yabok. He crosses the yabok. Now the yabok is on the other side of the Jordan, on the east bank of the Jordan. Ve'yikachem v'yivireim et hanachal v'yivir et asher lo. And then we get to this enigmatic passage, and of course, being that it's an enigmatic passage, that's what we'll spend most of our time on. Now, I don't know how many of you have experienced writing, but the writing over here, my editor would never let me get past this, and I'll explain why in a moment. V'yivater Yaakov levado. Yaakov was all by himself. V'yavek ishimo ad lota shachar, and a man wrestled him until the morning. Well, the day dawned. Now, there's a clause which is missing there. It should have said, and Yaakov was all by himself, and a man accosted him and attacked him. Now, the truth is that we're so used to Jews getting mugged, right? We have like 2,000 years, of, at least, of history of this, that this just doesn't surprise us anymore. If I say that a Jew walked in London and somebody attacked him, would you be, why? Because he's a Jew. The Jew was walking in New York or L.A. or wherever it is, and somebody attacked him, say, hold it, that's the strangest thing. I can't believe that the Jew got attacked. No, none of us are surprised by this. But a clause was missing. V'yivater Yaakov levado, Yaakov was all by himself. So there should have been another clause there. Somebody comes, somebody sees him, somebody attacks him. Doesn't say that. It says, V'yaveki shemod lo tashachar. A man wrestles with him until the morning dawns. V'yar ki lo chal lo, and this is the part that I would not get away with, and he saw that he could not defeat him. Why would I not get away with this? You'd have to define who the he and who the who, right? Vayar ki lo yochalo. He saw he couldn't defeat him. Who's the he and who's the him? You'd have to write names here, but it doesn't say it. Vayiga b'kach yirecho, and he grabbed his thigh, and only then we have an explanation at the end of the verse, which would not have been necessary had the verse been written in a clearer way. And Yaakov's thigh was hurt when he wrestled with him. Again, we get an impossible verse. We don't know who's speaking. Let me go. Which one is speaking? Ki Allah Shachar, because the day is dawning. I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me. And again, we're not told who says what to whom. And again, only in retrospect, now we have some indication. What's your name? Which is great. So why you attack this guy? You don't even know who he is. Vayomer Yaakov. He goes, I'm Yaakov. And then, this is quite strange for an adversary to do. Vayomer lo Yaakov yemer od shemecha. Can you imagine the guy mugging you saying, no, I'm going to rename you. You're not Yaakov. Kim Yisrael. You're Yisrael. Ki sarita melokim ve'anashim batuchal. Because you struggled against God and against man, or God against man, and you've been victorious. Vayisha Yaakov yomer gidona. Shemecha. Yaakov says, tell me your name. And the guy's obviously Jewish because he answers the question with the question and says, "V'yomer lo mazet tashal shmi? Why are you asking my name?" V'yivrech lo tashem, and he blessed him. V'yikor Yaakov shem makom Pniel. Yaakov calls the name of this place Pniel. Ki re'iti Elokim panim al panim, but tinatzel nafshi. I saw God face to face. By the way, where did he see God face to face? I saw God face to face, and my life was saved. V'yizrech lo hashemesh kasher avara et Pniel, and the sun rose as he crossed over Pniel. V'utzalei al yirecho, and Yaakov was limping. And then we love the conclusion because we don't understand it at all. Therefore, Al Kain lo yachlu bnei Yisrael gid anasha. Therefore, Jews can't eat the gid anasha. Shel kaf yerech adi omazeh, which is on the thigh till this day. Ki nagag b'kaf yerech Yaakov b'gid anasha, because Yaakov's thigh got hurt. And all that we can say about this is Baruch Hashem, Yaakov didn't break a rib. And you read this, you say, what in the world are you talking about? So, Chazal, as we well know, tell us that the unknown adversary is Saroshel Esav. That this is Esav's heavenly protector. And Yaakov, and by the way, this is quite ironic. Because in utero, before they were born, we found the two of them struggling. The Yidur Tzitzu. They struggle in utero. So now we realize that that struggle in utero was actually foreshadowing the struggle which takes place over here. Between Yaakov and Saroshel Esav. But what's the irony? That in the morning, when he gets up, he's going to meet up with Esav. And by the way, that's our big problem. I am very disappointed with Esav. I don't know what to do with my Esav. Because when he gets up in the morning, instead of the Esav that we love to fear, it says, Vayisa Yaakov eina vayar, vine Esav ba. He looks up and he sees Esav is coming. And he's there with 400 people. So good, we're finally going to get, you know, good old-fashioned war. Annihilation. Rape. Right? Pillage. I mean, this is what's going to happen next. And then Esav totally wimps out on us. He divided them up. He put the Shvachot first, and he puts Rachel and Yosef last. And he goes and he bows down. Vayaratz Esav lekrato, and Esav comes running after him. Vayichabkehu, and he hugs him. Vayipol tzavaro, and he falls on his neck. Vayishakehu, and he kisses him. It doesn't say he bit him. You're going to tell me now what Rashi says. Vayivku, and they cry. What in the world happened to Esav? When did Esav become so sentimental? My long last brother. And he offers him to bribe him, and he goes, no, I got a lot. He goes, no, I have everything. No, take something anyway. And then the Esav comes, let's travel together. What happened to Esav? Meaning, Yaakov was so afraid, and did he have good reason to be afraid? Yes. What was the good reason? Esav swore he was going to kill him. That's reason number one. Reason number two, he brought a whole damn army with him. What happened to you, Esav? So, that's my problem. So I know what happened to Esav. Okay? I know what happened to Esav. Esav saw something which shocked him. Totally shocked him and rendered him, in a sense, helpless. He couldn't do anything to him anymore. So let me explain what it was. But let's go back to our enigmatic passage, and I want to try to explain what Chazal, in my opinion, really mean when they say Saroshel Esav. You know, part of the experience when you come to Israel for a year is that you undergo growth. hopefully if you stay for 2 years, you undergo more growth. And hopefully if you stay 3 years or 4 years, there's more growth. But you don't notice it. You don't notice it on a day-to-day basis. And I know I have joked in the past that seminary girls look in the mirror every day and say, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the firmest one of all? But that doesn't really happen. You know when you realize how you've changed? When you go back home. When you go back to the situation you were in, then you know, again, you know the friends you would hang out, you know the places you went, you know what you ate, you know what you did. And now, because you're no longer the same person, you suddenly get to this realization how much you've changed. Did that make sense? Going back to your own old environment is sometimes the best way of gauging exactly who you are now and how much you've changed. And I think that's what happened to Yaakov. Because it can't help but do a comparison between when Yaakov leaves Eretz Yisrael and he has his vision, and all that he leaves with is this walking stick in hand, and he says to God, you know, if everything works out, just please, just give me some bread and clothing on my back. That's all that. And now Yaakov has come back. And now Yaakov comes back and he's completely different. And Yaakov comes back, okay, he's got a large family, he's got these wives, and he's got all of this stuff, he's got all of these possessions. And when Yaakov left, he was still an Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. But we all realize that's changed. Because the 20 years living with Lavan, you can't live with Lavan and stay the same. First of all, you can't live with Lavan and stay the same because you got to keep up with Lavan. Lavan's going to rip you off, right? The one character in Tanakh you would not buy a used car from or a used camel from is Lavan. You can't trust the guy. He changes your salary, right? 10 times. In order to even get something loving, you got to trick them, you got to fool them, you got to leave. I mean, you have to do what you can to survive. Matter of fact, in order to survive love, and maybe you have to even channel a little bit of your inner Esav. Which is Yaakov, who's come back. And, you know, if I'll make it a little bit more dramatic, as he passes over the Yabok and he looks at his reflection in the river, you know, just like Narcissus of old, and he sees himself. And suddenly he doesn't recognize himself. And I know that sounds strange, but maybe at one point all of us look in the mirror and say, hold it, what happened? When did all this turn white? When did I get so old? How did I change so much? When did I put on this weight? Suddenly you look at yourself and you don't look exactly like you remember yourself looking or that you imagine yourself looking. But that's not just that Yaakov has changed or aged. It's that Yaakov now has realized how similar he is to his twin brother. And that's something we never want to think about. We never want to think about. Even the Rashi told it to us back in last week, Vayigidlu Anarim, says they're indistinguishable. Well, we always think, no, Esav symbolizes evil and Yaakov is good and Esav is hairy and Yaakov is... But maybe they were far more similar. Yes, they looked different. They shared a womb. They were twins. They shared certain basic DNA makeup. Maybe they're far more similar than we ever let ourselves imagine. And now Yaakov is looking at himself, and Yaakov has an incredible problem. He realizes completely now, he is no longer the same Yaakov that left Israel all those years ago. He's changed. He's become incredibly like Esav. And I believe that when it says, Vayivater Yaakov Levado, that Yaakov's all by himself, that's exactly what the Chumash means. Vayavek Ishimo, but a man wrestled with him. So of course now you just have to ask yourself, so who the man is? So when was the last time the word Ish was actually used in the text beforehand? Well, here's an interesting pasuk. In Perek Lamed, pasuk Mem Gimel, which describes when Yaakov made all of his money, what does it say? Vayifrotz ha'ish ma'od ma'od. Vayilotzon rabot u'shvachot v'avdim g'olim b'chamorim. Which is why that Rashi that you told me there is very difficult. Yaakov made it. Yaakov became a gever. Yaakov became a gvir. Yaakov became wealthy. That's exactly what the pasuk says. And it describes those exact things. Yaakov became somebody who is, if we know the secret, what's the secret? Yaakov became somebody who was the recipient of the bracha that was destined for Esav. But what does it describe him then? As Ha'ish, Vayifrotz Ha'ish Ma'od Ma'od. So when it says over here in our parsha, Vayivater Yaakov Levado Vayavik Ish Imo, I think the reason the text is written so enigmatically is exactly what I've already said. It's because Yaakov is struggling with himself. And it's the most basic struggle. The struggle is, who am I? Who have I become? I want to add in one element what the Zohar says. Later on, when Esav sees him, okay, I'll say the Zohar in a second. This is the reason that Esav doesn't kill him. Esav hated him because they were so different. What does Esav see now that he sees Yaakov, what he had never seen before? He sees that Yaakov is a lot more like him than he ever imagined. Yaakov no longer is that Ish Tam Yoshev Olim. Yaakov no longer is that guy who sits in the tents. Yaakov has become somebody else. There's no reason to fight. Yaakov could now be the brother that Esav never had. I know that sounds very funny. Yaakov can now be the brother that Esav never had. The brother who can be like him. He can't hate Yaakov now. Yaakov is Esav. How can Esav hate Yaakov? He's Esav. So he looks at him, come, let's join forces. Let's go together. And this is not the joining forces that Yitzhak had imagined. Yitzhak imagined Esav helping Yaakov, but not Esav helping Esav. Esav sees Esav. He sees himself. And that's what Yaakov had seen before. That's the reason Esav doesn't want to kill him. And Esav says, let's join, let's go together. Means the two of them see the exact same thing. And that's what Yaakov is struggling with. And that's why Yaakov, he can't meet up with Esav until this happens. Now the Zohar says, at the moment that they separate, when Esav goes in his way, the sun is going to set, and it says, what moment was this? The Zohar says, this was the moment of Ne'ilah. Which means that the whole meeting took place on Yom Kippur. Which means the night before was Kol Nidre. So what did Jews do by the evening of Yom Kippur? What did Jews do on Kol Nidre? We ask ourselves that exact question. Who am I? How did I become this person? Where did I make a wrong turn along the way? Whatever happened to the innocent person? Whatever happened to the Ish Tam Yoshev Olim? How in the world did I become the person I am right now? And that's what Yaakov is staring at and looking at and struggling with. And if we read the words carefully, he sees he can't defeat him. But this is an interesting resolution. The resolution is actually hurting his leg. The resolution when he hurts his leg is slowing down. What in the world does the slowing down have to do later on with the keeping kosher? What does this have to do with when Esav sees him come, let's join forces, and what does Yaakov say? No, no, the stuff that I have slows me down. Which means what the events that happened the night before impact what happens the next day. It slows me down. It's not what you think. Yaakov's not willing to tell Esav the truth because Esav right now is in a great mood. He's in a conciliatory mood. He wants to make up with him because he wants to make up with himself. But Yaakov has struggled with himself, and I want to say this clearly. Who has Yaakov struggled with? The part of himself which is Esav, and that's exactly what Chazal mean with Saru Shel Esav. We imagine Saru Shel Esav, the power of Esav, is something which is external, this devil with horns or whatever. The Saru Shel Esav has become a part of Yaakov, and that's exactly what he needs to struggle with. And I said there needs to be a resolution. What does he say to him? Let me go because the morning dawns. Again, what happens? The morning of Yom Kippur. You got to start. There's work to be done. It's life or death. And what does he say? I'm not going to let you go in ki im berachtani. Why does it always come back to the bracha with Yaakov? Ki im berachtani. And the bracha. But Yaakov already has the bracha. But that's exactly the point. The bracha somehow needs to be elevated. Who are you? What's your name? Yaakov. No. See, Yaakov was the one who was struggling with his identity. Am I Yaakov? Am I Esav? Am I Yaakov? Am I Esav? And even the name Yaakov is in conjunction with Esav when he grabs onto Esav. The very name of Yaakov is in relationship to Esav. So what does he say? No, you're not Yaakov. You're Yisrael. That's the resolution. You're something else. But what exactly is Yisrael and what exactly is the resolution? That's the Gidon Asher. The Gidon Asher tells me something. I am allowed to have a beautiful, wonderful cow. I'm allowed to shecht it. I'm allowed to take a great rib steak. But I make sure it's kosher. I make a bracha on it. I elevate the physical and I turn it into something which is spiritual. Which means Judaism has never been a religion that rejects the physical world. This is the resolution. Yaakov receives this bracha with the physical world and he looks, who am I? I'm Esav. He says, no. The resolution is Yisrael. Yisrael knows how to take the physical and turn it into something which is spiritual. The elevating the physical into something spiritual, that is the resolution. Which means once Yaakov knows how to do this, now Yaakov can meet up with Esav. Because Yaakov's not the same as Esav. It's not stuff for the sake of stuff. It's taking the physical world and elevating it to something which is spiritual. And just to see how this follows through, again, the Chumash is unbelievable, but I think that this is exactly the point of the Zohar. In Pasuk Yud Zayin it says, once they separate, V'yashov b'yamahu Esav l'darko Se'ira. Esav goes back to this place called Seir. V'yakov nosas Sukkota. And Yaakov went to a place called Sukkot. V'yivin l'bayit, and he builds a house. U'lemiknehu, but for the animals, for the stuff, for the possessions, asas Sukkot. Okay, k'rashim ha'makom Sukkot, and therefore the place is called Sukkot. So strange. He builds a house with the animals, there are ten, so he calls it Sukkot. Why are you focusing on the animals? So I think this is where the Zohar got its whole idea from. Where did Jews go right after Yom Kippur? We go to Sukkot. What's the idea of Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is we struggle between life and death. We struggle between identity. Who are we? We struggle, are we going to live or are we going to die? That's what Yaakov does on Yom Kippur. That's what he does already the night before. That's the struggling. What happens the next day? Okay, make the all of Yom Kippur. By the way, what's the key part of Yom Kippur? A Seir la'azazel. Just like Yaakov gave gifts to Esav on that day, every year in Yom Kippur, we give gifts to Esav, the Sara Shel Esav. There's a long passage which the Ramban quotes in the Pirkei Rabbi Lezer, which says, what's the Seir la'azazel? It's a gift for the Satan. It's a gift for Esav. It's a gift for Sarah. What in the world are you talking about? Which means when it comes down to it, the whole, and by the way, the Rav of Soloveitchik in Al HaTshuva has a whole chapter which explains this Ramban, which is almost incomprehensible without his explanation. But that's the explanation. Is that we need somehow to do exactly what Yaakov did on that day, on that first Yom Kippur as it were, to be able to survive in our Yom Kippur, and part of it is to give the is to go and to bribe Sarah Shel Esav, or bribe Esav himself. As I said, I'm not going to get into every element about how this works, but what happens afterwards? After we finish Yom Kippur, we get to Sukkot. What do we do on Sukkot? What is Sukkot about? On Sukkot, unlike perhaps Rosh Hashanah, or certainly Yom Kippur, when we're dealing with life and death, and who will live and who will die, when the book of the living and the book of the dead and so are open. What do we do on Sukkot? We actually, if you guys went to Gush, I would use the word dialectic, but you don't go there, so I'll have to use a different word. Is actually, yes? The dialectic over here is the movement in two opposite directions at once. And on Sukkot, we take the Arba Minim and we pray for rain. We pray for Geshem. What's Geshem? Gashmiut. You know, the old timers, the farmers, understood it exactly. When it rains, things are going to grow. The more it rains, again, to a certain extent. When it rains, and it rains a lot, we're going to have more food. We're going to have more money. For Sukkot, we pray for rain. We pray for Geshem. We pray for Gashmiut. We're praying for our bank accounts. Which means on Yom Kippur we're praying who will live and who will die, but once we got past that, okay, now let's talk about quality of life. That's what Sukkot is, quality of life. But what do we do at the exact, this is a dialectic, what do we do at the exact same time that we're praying for quality of life? We walk out of our homes, and we walk into a Sukkah, and we say, but we know what's really important in life, and that's to be under God, that's to be under the Shekhinah, and even when we pray for these things, we know it's not all that important. I don't even say it's a necessary evil. It's necessary in this world. We need stuff in this world. And having more of it is not bad. So please give me stuff, but I know it's not the most important thing. So at the exact same time I pray for quality of life, I walk out of the sukkah, I walk out of the house, and I walk into a dirat arai. And what's fascinating is that's where this comes from. This is part of Yaakov's resolution. The resolution of the Gid HaNasha the night before, in terms of hurting the thigh of the Gid HaNasha, that I need to find holiness to deal with this stuff. This is part of the exact same resolution that for the animals he builds a sukkah. So what's a sukkah? This is all temporary. This whole world is temporary. Yes, we need stuff in this world. It's necessary. But it's not what's really important. all the possessions I have go in the sukkah. It's not really that important. So now we understand, I hope we understand, this parsha. It's one thing to get the bracha of Esav, it's another thing to live with it. To live with the bracha of Esav becomes this unbelievable challenge for Yaakov. Yaakov wanted to be in Ishtam Yosheva Olim. That's all he ever wanted. So the curse is that he becomes a much more complicated person. Because with Yaakov, it's always complicated. But the resolution is now he's Yisrael. And that's what Eretz Yisrael is, and that's what Am Yisrael is, and that's what Torat Yisrael is. What is it? It's taking things in life and bring it whole, and bring holiness to it. The land of Israel is not like every other land. It's a land which is imbued with holiness. The resolution of Yisrael is one which, instead of relating to Esav, right, Yaakov, the heel of Esav, now Yisrael, now we're somebody who struggles with holiness. Yisrael, now we struggle with God. Not in a negative way we struggle with God. Now we struggle to bring godliness into all the things that we do. And we're going to do things. We leave our comfort zone. The comfort zone of Yaakov was to sit in that tent. And it wasn't the will of God. The will of God is that things become a lot more complicated. The will of God is that Yaakov doesn't end up with one wife, he ends up with four wives. The will of God was that he has children from these different wives. And all of this is going to paint Jewish history in a very complicated way. And Malchut Yisrael versus Malchut Yehuda, and Yehuda versus Yosef and the parasha which come out. Yeah, things are going to be complicated. But we're going to be Yisrael, and we're going to struggle all the time to bring Kedusha into everything that we do. That's what Yaakov resolved that night. Before that resolution, he can't meet up with Esav. The reason he survived is because he looked so much like Esav. The reason he survived is because Esav loved himself, and he looked at Yaakov. He thought he was loving himself. Brother, he never had this brother before. He thought he won. There's nothing sweeter than that. Esav thought that Yaakov finally grew up, and that old Yaakov and the whole tent stuff and the whole fixing the world and tikkun olam and healing all these things, he grew out of it, and now finally Yaakov grew up and he's just like Esav, and Esav is ready to love him for it. And what does Yaakov say? You go ahead, I'll catch up with you. Because all the stuff I have slows me down. I don't believe Esav ever understood. I don't believe he ever caught up with him either. Chazal say that. So we look through all of Tanakh. We never found when they actually caught up with him. Yaakov says, all the stuff I have slows me down. Yaakov says we need to find a way of imbuing all the things that we do with holiness. Yaakov goes straight from Yom Kippur to Sukkot. Yaakov understands it's about quality of life, but the whole secret of quality of life in Judaism is being holiness to the quality of life. So that's why it's the Sukkot. That's the resolution that Yaakov already figures out the night before, and now you realize where the Zohar had no choice. It had to be. It had to be Yom Kippur. That's when we struggle with who we are. So, as a conclusion, Yaakov's life is very complicated. But the resolution of the complication is that Yaakov becomes Yisrael. He becomes Yisrael, at least he has a way of dealing with the complication, and now we know what the secret is. The secret is bringing holiness into his life, and when he does that, he just becomes transformed, becomes a different person.